man and machine, and we're going to kind of wind down with this. If you remember the last time out, we did talk about some of the challenges that technology brings, and you know, we can very, very easily make an idol of technology, and when we do that, we become like those things we idolize. Thank you, Sian, for helping us do that. We become like our idols, and we don't want to do that. So there's a little bit more of the same here with this. And so he's going to wind down that chapter, and he's going to talk about taking a digital fast, right? Okay, fasting from it. And he's going to begin this last segment and end this last segment with the idea that really the choice between us is, are we going to remain creatures, or are we going to become machines? Now, on some levels, you know, we're always going to be creatures, and we can't become complete machines, at least not yet. But we also don't want to become machine-like. And so I think that's probably a little better way of dealing with what he's trying to say here. So it's intrinsic to the creation itself that we are creatures, and that is our true nature. And last time you talked about technology being an idolatry, I'm halfway down, where it says the source of all disorder is loving finite things more than the infinite God. And, you know, there are some people who have some major love affairs with their iPhones. I think there actually was a movie about that once where an iPhone was the girlfriend. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
I do have that right? What was the name of that movie? Anybody know? Anybody else remember that? There was a movie made where this guy just fell in love with his iPhone, literally. So you don't want that, right? Even loving good things, right? Like your family, loving your country, can be a source of damnation if we love them more than we love God. So we don't want to do that. He then gives the illustration here about from Dante and in this mythical story here about how he loved Beatrice, you know, more than anything else, and he ends up being condemned about that because he was singularly focused on this woman. What else is new? Right? That young guys get singularly focused on the woman that they are chasing. Great thing for me to remind you all of during rutting season, right? They all have a singular focus, certainly at that point, okay? And so the same thing kind of happens here. Last paragraph down here, religion has always been understood as directing human attention toward what is holy, not on the thing, but whatever we see in the world, whether it's creation or something that even man makes, should remind us of the glories of God and give our appreciation to him. So, turning the page here at 227, right? We need to order ourselves around the things that are divine, about the things that are about God, or else we will end up in idolatry. And idolatry is damnable, but it's also dangerous because we become like those things that we idolize, right? And if we idolize a machine, a piece of technology, we will become more machine-like, okay? So, keep our eyes focused on God. One of the solutions, at least he has in terms of putting the brakes on this down at the bottom of the page, the monks, right? The Benedict option was about the monks, right? The monks find their true liberty by submitting to the rule, which is to say by ordering themselves to God in a structured way. It's that whole break from becoming more machine life. What are some of the downsides of machines? We're turning the page now to 228. There is this toxic, what he's calling a tide of chronic anxiety. Do we see this? Is this about COVID? You know, where our culture, everybody's just like really on edge here. It's about COVID and all of the misinformation, but it's also about, you know, social media and the machines and the responses. And you know, if you think about some of the lawsuits that are out there now with TikTok and other things, where all these young girls have all of these psychological trouble because they're on this social media all the time. So he refers to this toxic tide of chronic anxiety, and you know, that's a good reason to throw away your cell phone for a while. He talks about it's hard to be on the beachhead in which the Holy Spirit could work to calm the stormy waters. I got to give the guy kudos. He didn't talk about liquid modernity there. Isn't that great? And look at all those references to water. Toxic tide, a beachhead, and stormy water. And he didn't mention liquid modernity. Who's happy about that? Raise your hand. All right, this is a participatory Sunday school. All right, so a Jewish organization called Reboot, of all things. I mean, why would you call it Reboot? Why would you steal their terminology? Reboot promotes this idea of taking a digital Sabbath, right? On Sunday, Saturday, you throw your cell phone away. Okay, and doing this sort of thing is not a punishment, even though it might feel that way, right? It's not a punishment. It's a means through which you can kind of lay aside the cares of the world. It's not a punishment. Next paragraph talks about this is a part of ritual fasting that perhaps we ought to partake of. Last sentence on that paragraph, as Jewish observe the Sabbath, none of this is meant to be punitive. You all know that the Sabbath is not punitive, right? It's a blessing to us. It's not punitive, but it's for the good of mankind. And if we don't do that, last paragraph on that page, what are we doing? We're doing what Postman describes in his famous book. We are amusing ourselves to spiritual death. Turn the page. I blocked out a whole middle section here because many of us are not in the parenting stage of our life right now, but take smartphones away from kids. There was a whole segment on that. And he cites many of the famous people who were involved in technology. Steve Jobs himself never let his kids use cell phones. And there were others that were mentioned. And then he transitions into this whole idea here of keeping social media out of worship. So, tweeting and texting during worship service is sometimes encouraged. I've not been to a church that encourages that, but I understand that they are there. So, you know, I mean, I can just imagine if we encouraged people here to text and to tweet. I mean, already, I'm guessing that more than once Andrew sent something to Jared, and Jared said, "Do you really believe Dad said that?" or something like that. I really think that that is something that ought to be encouraged too much. And those who do encourage it say that the idea is that this is simply just another way to share the gospel. Well, you know, maybe, but you know, he wants to put the brakes on that as well. And next paragraph down, he says, the last place anyone needs to have his attention divided is during Sunday worship. You know, let's check the game, right? What's the score? What's the weather? Are we going to make it home? Is he preaching so long that, you know, my turkey's going to burn in the oven or whatever? Many people, especially the young, live all week immersed in a fragmented headspace. All these little sound bites that are no more than 15 minutes max. Bringing social media into Sunday worship exacerbates this problem in part by denying that it is a problem in the first place. Neuroscience, next page, has demonstrated that remembering a thing depends on sustaining attention to it. Engaging in social media during worship all but guarantees that anything the pastor says will be gone like that. Some of us have no problem with that already, and some of you don't need extra help having it go away like that. That next paragraph down here, more deeply than that, we need to recognize here that what we do here is about formation. And again, a liturgy is a dance. It's a dance, and it forms us. And I'll say this again, I said it before, the processional, as simple and perhaps weird as we may think that is, that's a reminder that God is showing up. I know I'm not God. It's a reminder that God, we're coming into his presence, and the king, as I am representing him, you know, even saying that is difficult for me, but it's a good reminder. It's a whole lot better. So that formation, and then we kneel before him, and we know that we can't approach him, you know, without his permission and without his forgiveness, and we have to be cleansed by him before all this sort of formation stuff, and then we're sent out in a commission, but not before we're at peace with him and we've had communion with him, and not before we've been washed and consecrated with the word of God. All of these things are deeply rooted formation matters of our being. They form our being. And so that's what worship is. And so if we're going to just kind of break that up into little factoids and little pieces of information and strip away all of those formation matters, we're missing a whole bunch. We're missing a whole bunch. And then he's going to move into this whole idea, and this can be controversial as well, because there is a whole other angle and strain that's taken place in our culture where feminism has been on such the ascendancy and masculinity has been such in the tank and disrespected that many men are saying that, you know what you really need to do? You need to be somebody who is 100% a blue-collar person. You have to work dirty with your hands. You have to do difficult jobs. You know, how dare you aspire to do anything more technical than digging a ditch? I think digging a ditch is fine. And I think digging a ditch can be a very masculine thing to do. But the progress of Christian civilization is that there is this division of labor. And you know what? It's okay for very masculine men to be in white-collar jobs, right? So some of the ways that the people are trying to bring back a measure of masculinity into our culture are really trying to turn the clock back, and it's really not the path of the future. The future is going to be made by Christian people, but it's not necessarily going to be made by Christian men who have left all of those other power buttons in the culture and gone back to digging ditches only. And there's nothing wrong with digging a ditch. But here he's going to suggest this idea, and I think he'll be wrong if he were to say that there's virtue in this. Because there's not necessarily more virtue in being a ditch digger than there is in being a neuroscientist or surgeon. A white collar job. Anyway, he talked about Andrew Sullivan. I guess he's a big shot. Anyone ever hear of him? Terry? He's a big shot.
I guess he was.
Yeah, 5 years ago. Time at this point. Anyway, he was, at some point in his life, was really bemoaning the fact that the internet and all of this stuff was hurting him personally. A little farther down, Andrew told me that this was the fruit of getting off the internet. Little Pastor Jim attempts at humor here. He had an epiphany. That's next season, not Advent. But epiphany is like, wow, the light came on, right? And he said this, every minute that I was engrossed in virtual interaction, I was not involved in human encounter. I mean, fair enough, okay. Every second absorbed in some trivia was a second less in any form of reflection or calm or spirituality. Multitasking was a mirage. Karen, hearing that? Multitasking is a mirage. She always says, I can only do one thing at a time. I think she's probably right about that. She's the queen of multitasking. This was a zero-sum question. I either lived as a voice online or I lived as a human being in a world that humans have lived in since the beginning of time. And so after 15 years, I decided after 15 years to live in reality and not in contrived cyberspace. again. I think you ought to be careful about that. I think it's okay to take that as some healthy advice about not living there, but I don't think that it is a sign of virtue nor a sign of masculinity to throw away your cell phone. And so our author is gonna pound this a little bit harder here about doing things with our hands. And so that's the reason for my notation at the bottom of that paragraph. We're on page 233 right now, where we're talking about being careful, because the division of labor is good. Division of labor is good throughout the Bible. That's progress. Okay? I like my job, and I don't begrudge anybody who wants to pursue a trade. As a matter of fact, some of the trades are probably more lucrative. And you know what? There's a time for everything. And the other thing that's true is learning how to do stuff is probably a good idea if you really believe that your culture is going to go into the tank. You're going to have to make a living somewhere. And so I'm not trying to disagree to the point where I'm saying learning how to do things with your hands and learning a trade is a bad idea. I'm just saying it's not necessarily a virtue. Are we clear on that? Anybody want to critique me on that? Or? He's going to kind of begin to wrap this up here with this idea about questioning progress. And again, we're not machines. That's the theme of this whole chapter. And so we're not some sort of biological form of a computer. He says technological progress is not the same thing as moral progress. That's really true. And then he says, in fact, it can be its opposite. No. Can be. Doesn't mean it is always the opposite, right? It can be. So, we go back to bioethics, and we talked about this before. I mean, why not clone your favorite child, right? Why not? Bioethics, right? Things we are going to be facing in the next decade or so can shock us. And he says, my colleagues can't see it. And he says, even the Christians can't see it. He gets blank stares when he brings this up to them. And he writes that in our culture during these times, these are scientists whose minds have been captured and disarmed by technology, which trains us to think of ourselves in instrumental terms. A century ago, the progressives had embraced eugenics, right? It was just a scientific way of looking at culture. The pseudoscience of improving the race through the controlling of breeding. Leading churchmen endorsed the idea, saying it would improve society through applied science. It fell to the Roman Catholics and the Protestant fundamentalists to object to eugenics on grounds of human dignity. But a lot of the leading lights in the culture, a lot of the white-collar folks, said, hey, let's go eugenics. Eugenics ended up falling into disgrace because of the Nazis. Can anything good come out of Nazism? Yes. We've rejected eugenics, right? But eugenics seems to be making a comeback. Designer babies. Designer babies are not far off. The connection, next paragraph, between a future technologically driven dystopia and the suburban shopping mall is closer than you think. As we saw in chapter 1, right, only 9% of millennials surveyed thought consumerism was a serious moral issue. For most Americans, desire is self-justified. If I want it, you see, where you don't have a doctrine of the depravity of the heart, if you think that human nature is essentially good, if I want something, it must be good. Where the old Calvinist would say, no, we're totally depraved. If we want something, a big red flag should go up. that says, is this good or is it evil? Desire is self-justifying. For consumers, if you can't afford it, why not buy it? For citizens of a technocracy, if the technology exists to give you what you want, no one has a right to object. So, fast forward here. Push a button. We're 20 years later. I think I'll clone some of my kids. Maybe I should clone my wife. Who could surpass those perfections, right? So, I mean, if you can do it, and you want to do it, you have the two trump cards right in your hand. Just do it. So these are, you know, and again, some of this is out there, but at some level, we make sure we're not being sucked into that, and we have to be able to back off of that kind of thinking. And the challenge is, our kids are already far down the road of thinking that way, and our grandkids are far down the road of thinking that way. And who are you to object to the things that they want to do? The mind of technological man cannot resist the heart's desire. There you go. Because he's not been trained, because he has been trained, rather, by his culture not to question them. Technological man comes to believe that the limits on what he can do to nature lie primarily in his capacity to subdue it to his will. I want to do it, therefore we're going to find a way to do it. Let's turn the page. Not quite sure where I want to pick it up. I'll pick it up the second paragraph here. Again, we go back to moralistic therapeutic deism, which again is this truncated form of the Christian faith. MTD means the Christian faith is emptied of its essence. One effect of which is to culture Christians to believe that God blesses whatever makes them happy. Yikes, what a dangerous thought that is, that God blesses whatever makes them happy. In this way, technology becomes a kind of theology, a changeable protean, it means changeable theology, because the God to whom it bears witness is ever changing. God used to think that way, but God has changed. The ever-changing self that is seeking liberation. You know, what describes modern America more than this? Liberation from all limits and unchosen obligations. How many young people do you know that really don't want to be obligated to anything? They don't mind showing up for this or for that or when it suits them, fine, but, you know, don't pin them down. Do not ply any level of obligation upon them. And you know what? Yours should be a world without limits. That sounds like some financial investors. I think it is a financial investor's advertising line. Am I right about that? I think so, right? Yours should be a world without money. Well, then there's always McDonald's, right? Have it your way. I mean, come on. Okay, and this is really big. This is the culture we live in. Every time the church embraces a new fad, especially trends that turn worship into an electronic spectacle, I wonder if that ever happened anywhere, it yields more to its soul, to this false theology, this idea that God is changing. And before long, we may be at the point where in some places the church does become fully possessed by the spirit of this world. Yikes. Next paragraph down, the core reason is that immersion in technology, so I think we are better to be sprinkled by it, right? That's a good way to be. Want to be sprinkled by technology? Good, but don't be immersed in technology. Immersion in technology causes us to lose our collective memory. This goes back to that form and shaping us. Without memory, we don't know who we are. If we don't know who we are, we become whatever our momentary passions wish us to be. The answer to that, of course, is union with Christ. And you think about how the average person, you know, they not only don't know who they are, they don't know where they are. When you come into the Assembly of the Saints on Sunday, and I'm not talking about the building, but when you're gathered as a church, you're in a special different place. And that means you should act differently, the way you talk to each other should be differently, the way you dress should be differently. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but the younger generation doesn't think in terms of gathering together with the saints means I'm in a different place. My orientation, my action, my discussion, my conversation, my dress, all ought to be different. They don't think that way. Because they've been immersed in this world where the collective memory of these things is gone. And then he closes with this. He says, no regime is trying to steal our cultural memory. That's not quite true, because we live in cancel culture, right? This is 5 years old. Right now, there are certainly forces on the outside taking down statues, whatever. You know, you can't, you know, our founding documents are no good anymore. Yeah, there are lots of forces against us trying to steal our collective memory. But technology is doing it, not by virtue of the outside forces, but as he says here, there, no regime is trying to steal our cultural memory and Christian identity from us. We are giving it away ourselves. Postman Council, the strategy of resistance, saying that a resistance fighter understands that technology must never be accepted as part of the natural order of things. Otherwise, the war is over. And what is he talking about there? He's not talking about never use technology, but if we make it an idol, we become like the machine. So, will we remain man, or will we become a machine? Is where the benediction is going. So, we're kind of winding that down, and that's the I don't know if that's the good news or the bad news on the front. We're ending our Sunday School POV series. But guess what? Today we are starting an Advent preaching series, Parish Adventures, Then and Now. So we're going to have an attempt at trying to apply some of what we've done these 25 sessions. Who's got